Welcome to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we explore news and issues affecting hunters, anglers, and conservation across the northeastern United States. If you enjoy the content here, be sure to subscribe to our print or digital versions by calling 800-535-5191 or visit our website at outdoornews.com. Now, here's your host and a man who claims he's immune to buck fever, New York Outdoor News editor Dan Ladd.
This episode of the Great Northeast Podcast is brought to you by the Family Forest Carbon Program, a collaborative initiative created by two nonprofit organizations, the American Forest Foundation and the Nature Conservancy, assisting landowners in improving the health of their land with long-term sustainable forest management practices while providing guaranteed annual income. Learn more at familyforestcarbon.org. Welcome to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and it is that time of year, folks. We are staring down the opening of firearm seasons here in northern New York, the northern zone, that is, on October 19th, which is coming up, probably will have passed by the time you have heard this. The northern zone muzzleloading season will be open. And a week later, on the 26th, that will be the opening day of the firearm season in New York's northern zone. A whole bunch of other things going on. Pretty much every state in the Northeast has a hunting season of some sort or other open right now. And we got some word from New York State Department of Environmental Conservation concerning crossbows. Up to this point, they've issued over 11,000 ADA permits for those who can't pull back a longbow or a compound. Quite a program and quite an accomplishment on DEC's part for handling all that. We'll have a report on that in the November 1st edition of New York Outdoor News. Meanwhile, we're getting excited for hunting seasons and getting off track from hunting for this podcast episode. Not so much off track, but we've got Jim Liebram. He is with the Warren County Soil and Water Conservation District. Now, if you're not familiar with them, at least if you're in New York, you have one of these in just about every county. And they do a lot of different things, as Jim will explain. One of the things they do in our area is the tree and shrub sale every year. So if you're in your county, if you buy Christmas trees or maybe even some forage for wildlife, whether it's grouse or deer or whatever, sometimes that comes through your soil and water conservation district. So Jim's got a lot of good stuff to talk about. We're going to be back with more from him right after this.
In the world of deer hunting, knowledge is the key to success. Introducing OutdoorNews.com, your ultimate companion in the pursuit of the perfect hunt. Stay up to date with the latest hunting tips, gear reviews, and regulations for your state and your area. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com helps you elevate your hunting skills to unprecedented heights. Visit OutdoorNews.com and experience the thrill of the hunts like never before. OutdoorNews.com, where hunters become legends.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. Happy to be along with Jim Liebram. And Jim is the, I'll let him describe his title and his position, but he's basically been at the helm of the Warren County Soil and Water District in upstate New York, up in the Adirondack region. And Jim, I don't think a lot of people really fully understand what soil and water districts are. I want to make you welcome, first of all. I guess I should have introduced you first, but I'd like you to talk a little bit about these soil and water districts, what they are and what role they play for the sporting community. I mean, we're talking about forest and water and all kinds of great stuff here that is part of what we do, correct?
Correct. And thanks for having me, Dan. I appreciate being on. Soil and Water Conservation Districts in New York, because every state is a little different, believe it or not. We're kind of a unique breed of government, and we are government. But we actually have in our case, in Warren County, a 7-member board of directors, which helps direct and guide what we offer to the community and landowners. And that's through the development of an annual plan of work. But if you have a really good board, then you can do a lot of different activities. And I think you are familiar with a lot of what we do. Through the years, it's evolved. When I first started, I did a watershed management plan for Halfway Brook, and that's a, as you know, a very familiar stream to a lot of people in the part of Warren County and Washington County that we live in, and has a lot of trout in it, and it's a beautiful area. But not everybody has trout streams in New York State. And so in some cases, you're working with warm water systems. You're working with a lot of agriculture. That's a big driver in New York and soil and water districts working to reduce impacts. I'll say the one common theme for most soil and water districts is reducing problems with our natural resources. And, you know, I like the fact that I can walk outside pretty much anywhere in Warren County and breathe fresh air, and you look at the water, and the water quality is great. A lot of that's driven by development, urbanization, and also what type of soils you have. But if we can reduce our impacts, we're going to be able to enjoy our outdoor time a lot more. And in the case of our county, in Warren County, you know, we're very heavily dependent on a tourism economy. And we want people coming to enjoy their time up here and spend money and support our county. So there's a lot of activities that we do in Warren County. That's from hazard mitigation, because I'm the hazard mitigation coordinator for Warren County. So that's dealing with after effects, meaning once the floodwaters have gone down, once the trees have kind of been moved away from, for example, our tornado. I've been out to visit five or six landowners who've called me, because it's we have to get invited. We just can't go out, and try to help them figure out what to do. What are the next steps? And also look for additional funding for the county to help support cleanup services. Hey, maybe we should be looking at getting some chippers, additional chippers or tools, things like that, that don't have to come out of a budget. You know, if we can look and do improvements for culverts so that we don't lose our culverts and roads, so that people can stay connected driving during times of emergency, so that first responders can safely travel. There's a lot that goes into that. We deal with agriculture. In our case, a lot of it has to do with woodlot owners. So we're looking at people who are using forest products, maybe growing mushrooms or herbs. Looking at maple sugaring production. But we do have a small but growing community of folks who do produce, small animals, things like that. We just, and Dan, you're familiar enough with Warren County to know we don't have the fields, we don't have the expanses that such as Washington County has. So we support a certain type of agriculture, but it is growing. And you're starting to see a lot of that self-sustenance kind of occurring more and more as the years go on. So I like to see it's a good use for the land. The people, it allows the people to really feel connected to the land and want to do more as a steward. So again, across New York State, it varies. Some soil and water districts assist communities with proper ways of removing dams, get funding for it, put in habitat for fish and wildlife. If you're removing a dam, you have a big flat area, waterfowl, that's a huge benefit. Different types of fish, in-stream fish habitat, that's wonderful. And again, working in agriculture, working in the field of forestry, there's a lot of aspects to soil and water districts that we can work on. And it's almost only limited by your imagination and how much funding you have. So that's kind of a generalization of soil and water districts in New York. Now, outside of New York, there are some places called soil and water districts. They omit the conservation. There are some natural resources districts. People get hung up on trying to figure out who we are. And we were formed by an act of approval by the governors back in the 1930s in response to the Dust Bowl. And it was essentially to allow the states to take actions to improve our agricultural production. And through the years, since the 1930s, it's been recognized that we need to do additional work in our natural resources to conserve what we have. You know, we have great hunting. We have great fishing. There's a lot of opportunities out there, and we want to keep that. So as time goes by, you know, the state law is modified as necessary to include different language for invasive species management, you know, adding different aspects. Soil health is a popular term now. So I've listened to some other podcasts out there, especially from Minnesota, and they had a wonderful podcast, and it was great to hear. And it was very similar setup to what we have in New York. So the bottom line is, at least in my perspective, is I'm here to serve the public in our county and the people of New York. As you know, I hunt, I fish. It's they're things that I enjoy. They're things that I'm getting my son into. And I want to ensure that I and my office does everything we can to conserve what we have.
I want to talk about a topic that we covered in the newspaper quite a bit this summer, and that was you mentioned the tornado. And for folks may not realize, the tornado that came through New York that hit different counties, Warren County, where Jim is one of those counties. And we got kind of a 1-2 punch there with some floodwaters that you mentioned dams. I know it disrupted things over there in the Lowville area in the Western Adirondacks, mm-hmm. or outside the Western Adirondacks in Rome, New York, and places in the Finger Lakes, Western New York. But that tornado came through about a week later. And what have you heard from that? I mean, I've seen some drone footage, some helicopter footage from areas around Lake George. And I think when hunters go in the woods this year, including myself, I hunt one of the areas where that may have passed through. I think we might be surprised what we find once we get into the backcountry.
Yeah, if you're hunting in an area that has been affected, you know, plan on spending more time walking around things, right? I was out on a forestry site visit. We're doing some forest management planning, and there's a question of, should I walk underneath this stuff that's blown down or not? So there's a lot of walking around things, not under things. You're going to find some areas that are more difficult to traverse right now. Mother Nature, you know, will take care of it. In a few years, things will start breaking down pretty rapidly, depending on the tree species and the moisture content in the area. Overall, in one of the areas that was hard hit, it's in the town of Warrensburg, but most people just refer to it as Chestertown because it's closer to the hamlet up there. Green Mansions area, that got hit really hard. And some people who live there, you know, their yards, they lost every single tree. You're looking at, one gentleman that did a site visit on Scroon River lost 2 acres of trees. It's impressive to see when you're not exposed to that all the time, like in the Midwest. This is the third documented tornado since I've been here in about 25 years. We had one up in North Creek, one in Lake Luzerne, Queensbury, and then one in Warrensburg this year. Now, you know, looking at it from the perspective of wildlife management, ultimately it's in my opinion a good thing because it creates that forest disturbance. So if you enjoy wildlife, you're going to have an opportunity to see maybe areas or species of birds that are edge birds. Creates more sunlight coming in our pretty dense canopy of forest. So you're going to have, over the course of a few years, raspberries coming in. You're going to have that succession of hardwood species coming up, so that you're going to have more browse. As you know, we talk about deer quite a bit. They're going to find it, and maybe that those are areas that you concentrate on in the future. But you know, they're the birds, as in the music group, you know, to everything turn, turn, turn. And so that's exactly what's happening in these areas. And again, if you're a landowner and you had damage to your house, damage to your garage, your car, and I've seen it all. That's, you know, unfortunate for you, because that's something you have to deal with. But if it's out in the woods, and it's not probably as critical unless you've been managing your woodlot, then you have a problem. A lot of the areas that I saw, I just looked at, and it was, you know, what the term we use, you know, the wolfy pines and such like that. I look at it, but boy, that's going to be good wildlife habitat for a number of years. One of the reasons I say that, in case your listeners don't know, You know, we're in upstate New York. We're closer to Montreal than we are to New York City. And our county, Warren County, is the third most forested county in New York State. So 80% of our land is forest. So when we have these openings through disturbances, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but obviously it affects property such as a house, car, affects humans directly. That's a negative. But overall, for the wildlife, these openings in the forest, that's a positive thing.
Well, you know, every time we have a forest fire, you always hear people say, let it burn, rather than put it out. You know,
you are right.
We're going to be right back with more from Jim Liebram and the Warren County Soil and Water District right after this.
There's a great program available for youth who love to hunt and fish. It's called the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team, and any youth 18 or under can join for free at jrproteam.com. JPT program showcases useful videos and tips to help encourage the next generation to become stronger anglers and hunters. It's a platform to celebrate and inspire those outdoor loving youth. Check out the photos of Outdoor News Junior Pro Team members on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube, and visit our jrproteam.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and I've got Jim Liebram with us, and he is with the Warren County Soil and Water District here in upstate New York. In the Adirondacks, there's soil and water districts all over New York State and different similar programs in different states. Say that 10 times fast, Jim, different similar. there's a little contradictory statement anyways, but you're involved with a lot of forestry stuff with your job. And I know one of the things we're kind of looking out for in this area and something that has been in other parts of New York State and even Pennsylvania and other states is the hemlock woolly adelgid. And I hope I said that correctly. And I know you've done a lot with awareness on that. And as we come into hunting season, we've had campaigns in the past where hunters can help out with trying to find this. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit. Let's touch on that, what it is, and what hunters can do to help spot it, and when that will be. I believe it's a little later in the season. Is that correct?
Yeah. You can start finding them now, but they're less. It's much easier as you go into winter. I guess I'll put it that way. So, the hemlock woolly adelgid is a little scale insect, which doesn't mean much to probably most people, but suffice to say, You can say that it came in, it's imported, and can have devastating effects on the eastern hemlocks, and I think the Carolina hemlocks, which are a different species. Those two tree species, and for us it's the eastern hemlock, are critically important habitat for our areas that we live in. Portions of New York State from the Great Sacandaga Reservoir down in Fulton County, running up through Ticonderoga, Fort Ticonderoga for you American history enthusiasts in Essex County. There are some areas of forest land that are estimated to be 60% hemlock as a primary tree of the canopy. A lot of times we look at 40 to 50%. I own 14 acres and around 48% of my canopy is hemlock, and it's not unusual for the area. So hemlock trees are considered living barns. So, you know, if you want to go into a deer yard, where do you look? You know, a lot of times it's a hemlock forest. You know, the hemlocks hold up well. They don't shed snow as much during the times of year when we're getting heavy snow. The deer are less stressed. They don't have to use as much energy to survive. They can keep that fat layer. They can do some browsing, things of that nature. So, looking at it from the deer perspective, that's very important habitat. If we lose the hemlock, and there's part of the whole thing is a lot of it depends on the genetics of the tree. Some trees die relatively quickly. Some take up to 20 years. But if you start losing a number of trees of a single species in an area rapidly, then you can have problems with erosion. And if you have problems with erosion, then you might have some sedimentation of your streams. You can have an alteration of the fish that are in there. We're concerned with sedimentation, but also are we going to be having more sun on our streams? So if we have more sun on our streams, that's going to increase the temperature of those streams. And, you know, we do have a strong brook trout population in our county, but is that going to potentially reduce that brook trout population that we enjoy? There can be a lot of changes, and it's not just, oh, well, we lost this tree. It's, well, we lost this tree, and these organisms depend on this tree. So what happens when you lose that? I just liken it to when you start pulling a loose thread on a wool sweater. You know, where does it stop? So there are some groups that are working together across New York State, DEC, Cornell, the Hemlock and Hemlock Woolly and Adelgid Initiative, some local governments, some soil and water districts, and other partners working to scout and identify locations of hemlock woolly adelgid. There are some groups that are doing chemical treatments. The chemical treatments are generally sprayed on trunks or injected into the soil. And then we are looking at biological control agents. And
that's very interesting. That's where you're bringing in other bugs that can eat these, correct? Insects.
Yeah. Yes. And there's always the fear that something is going to go wrong. And I'm not going to say that it has, you know, you can go on YouTube and look up the cane toad, you know, in Australia, and you'll find that. But biological control agents are used regularly all around the world. They're vetted, you know, especially learning from the past, learning from mistakes. We've used biological control agents through the years, purple loosestrife beetles. So, you know, those have been introduced. One of the interesting things is, and if I get it correct, I believe one of the four agents, the biological control agents that are being evaluated and actually being released, is native to the Northwest United States. The Northwest United States and Western United States has the Western hemlock, which doesn't get afflicted nearly as bad, from my understanding. I've not seen that, but talking to one of the researchers who is from Washington State and who works for Cornell, they basically adapted their physiology. The Western hemlock's physiology is a little different than the Eastern hemlock's. And that starts getting into the research aspect, which I can't quite hang on to all the time. But suffice to say that, you know, they can fight back a little bit. But the populations of hemlock woolly adelgid spring up out the west, and then they die off, almost like our spongy moths do out here. You have a bad outbreak, and then it goes away for a number of years. So the good news is the biological control agents work, but it's the bad news of that is you need to have an infestation for them to establish, because if you don't, then it's, you know, the agents perish. So, and then when you have another outbreak, you have to seed them again. So
you've got to wait for HWA to grow or to become more, you know, a little more established before you release these.
It's kind of the good news, bad news, but that's why in our area, in the Lake George area, the state and the partners are doing a two-pronged approach. They are releasing agents where there's establishment of HWA, but in areas that the populations may not be high enough for their predator-prey relationship, they are able to do chemical treatments with certain permits. And that's not me going out. I'm not a certified applicator, but certified applicators that are approved through the state process. So chemicals will, it's kind of predicted that, which depending on the chemical you use, they're hoping that somewhere between a 5 and a 10 year, I'll give that as a ballpark treatment. So over time, when you have more woolly adelgids, you're going to have more biological control agents. You theoretically will use less chemicals in the future. So it's a multi-pronged approach to try to manage this infestation. The first time I saw it was in Springfield, Massachusetts, and it was pretty impressive in a park. And it looked like someone had taken and shaken up. Do you remember the old fake snow in a can that you'd spray on a Christmas tree? That's what this looked like. You know, it was incredible to see. So, and what happened?
The HWA infestation, that's what that looked like? Yeah.
Yes, it looked exactly like that. Or take a can of Barbasol shaving cream and spray it. That's, you know, kind of what it looked like. And what happens is, you know, is the bug pierces the base of the needle, the new growth of a hemlock needle. And the tree recognizes that attack. And so it basically sends a hormone out to restrict the flow of nutrients and water to that afflicted area. So it's kind of cutting off its own life's support to that area. And that's why the tree dies. So the bug doesn't really kill the tree, but it initiates almost like a histamine reaction to it. And that's what kills the tree. So
the tree kills itself.
Yeah, the tree kills itself. And it's something that we have to be aware of. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, Jim, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more talk on this HWA business, and especially what hunters can do to keep an eye out for it. Right after this.
All right.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and we're talking with Jim Lieberum from the Warren County Soil and Water District. And the subject we're on now is the HWA, the hemlock woolly adelgid. I always call it adelgid for whatever reason. These scientific names kind of, I never get them right. But Jim, you were talking about how this has been found in other states. What can you tell us about other northeastern states? Maine, you mentioned Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Vermont.
Yeah, it's pretty prevalent in the Northeast.
Are we working with other states on this, or is this a team effort, or is this New York trying to do what they can do to put a hold on it here?
Through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, through the U.S. Forest Service, through USDA, other aspects, through agreements with other states, you know, people recognize that there has to be some kind of concerted effort to manage HWA. But everything's a little different. We don't have a lot of federal land in New York State. We have a lot of state land. So the state is more prevalent in dealing with this as much as possible. I'm just pointing out that, you know, we have hemlock woolly adelgid, but we also have the emerald ash borer, and we do have the spongy moth popping up, and we do have beech leaf disease. You have all these things that take up time and effort and trying to manage it. So partnerships are extremely important, and that's where having people who are able to reach out to their counterparts in a different state, such as the gentleman from Cornell, Mark Whitmore, who's leading the effort from Cornell. He's the gentleman from Washington State. So he has experience with this back home, as it were. So, you know, they have the researchers have groups that they can bounce ideas, thoughts, and back and forth on. The regulatory agencies work together. There's a lot of cross-training for this. There's a lot of efforts. But again, the other thing is, you know, what state X allows as far as chemicals and treatments may not be what the next state over does. So the idea is to everybody wants to find that silver bullet, right? And there probably isn't. So the term's called integrated pest management, and that's kind of what New York is doing. We're doing scouting. They're doing identification. They're doing education. They're utilizing chemicals when necessary. They're introducing biological control agents. So an integration of different efforts to control the populations. We're not going to eradicate hemlock woolly adelgid, but we want to manage it so that our hemlocks are, you know, successful for the next 300, 400, 500 years, because that's how old some of these trees can get. And they've been referred to as a keystone species in our ecology, because so many things rely on it, from microorganisms all the way up to, you know, larger animals such as deer and moose and things like that. They play a critical role in our ecosystem.
So we're coming into hunting season here, mm-hmm. and hunters are about to take to the woods of the Adirondacks. I mean, the muzzleloading season is opening up here, and then right behind it is the regular season, and hopefully we'll get into some colder weather at some point. The near-term forecast, maybe not, but hopefully by November. So what can all these hunters poking around in the woods do to help out?
So, you know, when you're up in a tree stand or you're standing underneath a hemlock tree, you can take a look, at least identify, and there's a couple of different potential levels of infestation. But if you look on the underside of the hemlock branches with the needles, as we're getting into winter here, you're going to be able to visually see if you have decent vision. I have horrible vision with glasses, but I can still see them. These little insects at the base of the needle, kind of on the wood where the needle ties in. You're going to be able to see that. Now, what's easier to spot is the wool that they produce. That's the woolly part of it. So they look like little pieces of cotton on the underside. And there are other things that can look like that: spider webs, egg sacs, pitch from the tree. We get a lot of questions on that. So you learn to identify it. If you simply go to the DEC's website and look at how to identify, they have a one-page PDF. There's a lot of good information there. If you're in the Adirondacks, I would recommend looking at what's called the Adirondack Park Invasive Plant Program, APIP for short. Go to their website, just do a quick Google search for APIP, and it'll show you more specific information on hemlock willow adelgid as far as the Adirondacks. And if you are interested and you have your phone out there, there is a web app called IMAP Invasives. And one of them is for New York. And so, Dan, you're out there over, wherever you are, in, let's say, Washington County, hunting up there. If you find what you believe to be an infestation, you can report it on your app. And it doesn't have to have a cellular connectivity there. You can report it. And then once you get it into the area that's connected, it can be uploaded. And based on a picture that you've taken, on information you've entered, somebody can confirm it, or they can send somebody out to take a look at it, or they might follow up with a call to get some more information. So hunters can play a big role in this. And someone might say, well, why should I? You know, I don't want to do that, blah, 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 because of whatever reason. Well, again, if you enjoy hunting and fishing in New York, you kind of have to play a role, in my mind, in managing natural resources. And part of that is looking at the habitat where our animals are. And it's something critical that you can play a part of. It's a pretty straightforward, simple part. And if you know how to use a cell phone, that's going to be the easiest way to do it. So getting a little training, it doesn't take much. It's very simple to identify once you've seen it once or twice. But just being interested enough to take a look at that and educate yourself on what it is and the impacts, that'll go a long way to helping with this whole effort.
Great. Well, Jim, is there anything else you want to talk about regarding this or soil and water conservation districts? I mean, one thing I want to mention is that there's quite a few in New York State, including your own, that provide tree and shrub sales each year. And of course, I've taken part in that. And I think a lot of hunters and a lot of property owners do, and when they want to manage the properties or improve their properties. And I don't know if a lot of folks understand that that's the source of that.
Yeah. So a lot of soil and water districts in New York State, and there's actually 58, there's one for each county, and they combine the five boroughs. All right. So, and then in different parts of the United States, it might go by watershed instead of a county boundary, but ours are all county boundaries. I'm not a federal employee. I'm not a state employee. I'm not a county employee. I'm a district employee. And that kind of is hard for people to kind of understand, but it's simple when you think about it as, you have a school district, they're school district employees, we're conservation district employees. So we deal with Warren County, but then with partnerships and agreements. We assist other soil and water districts all the time. That's something that soil and water districts in New York do tremendously, is assist one another, because, you know, there's six people in our office that cover a lot of requests, a lot of site visits, a lot of projects and programs. We write a lot of grants. We administer the grants. We bring in opportunities for communities, for different departments and agencies in the county. So there's a lot that can be done, and one of which is the tree and shrub program. Most districts do that. It's a bare root seedling program, and it's for conservation purposes. Could be for Christmas tree planting, because that's part of agriculture. But, you know, we take that pretty seriously. We don't just throw a dart at the catalog and say, hey, let's just order white pines all the time. No, we kind of look at what's growing well, what will grow well in the majority of our county, and also kind of keeping an eye on what is something that you should plant in the future. You know, prediction models are showing our colder weather species marching north over 100 years. So we're going to have stuff creeping up and migrating up. I'm originally from Broome County. I take a look at some species that grow along down through there. We have species that 25 years ago, I didn't think we'd see in Warren County. And we have tulip trees growing. Oddly enough, we actually have native areas of sassafras, which most people think of just further south, but that's there. Black gum or black tupelo. I found a 21-inch diameter black tupelo growing on the shore of Lake George. So, you know, Mother Nature adapts pretty well. But again, if you're a landowner and interested in managing forests, you know, the hot term anymore is resiliency, climate adaptation. You can try reaching out to your local district, because what we do with forestry is going to be different than Hamilton County, which is going to be different than Seneca County, which is going to be different than Monroe County. There's different levels. And again, it's because it's locally led, grassroots driven by our board and the staff's abilities. So we can go out, make recommendations. I like to try things at my woodlot first to kind of give you the pros and cons of what's going on. So I think we're generally honest, hardworking folks that really just want to provide that assistance and are happy to do it. I've never said that I have a job. I've always said I have a career. And I think that's a significant difference between the two. And I'm happy with the services that we were able to provide. But at the same time, we're always looking to provide more assistance for different folks. So each county is different. I would encourage your listeners to seek out your local soil and water district. It might be environmental education through the high school. It might be agriculture through an urban environment. It might be trees. It might be fish. It might be dam removals. But I guarantee there's something of interest for you at your local soil and water district in New York.
Well, it's certainly been interesting talking with you, Jim, as always, and I hope the listeners feel the same way. I appreciate you coming on and putting up with us today for a little bit. You've been listening to Jim Liebram from the Warren County Soil and Water District. And for New York Outdoor News and the Great Northeast Podcast, I'm Dan Ladd.
Missed a past episode of the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast? You can find previous programs at outdoornews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platform. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover on this program, get yourself a subscription to Outdoor News. Simply call 800-535-5191 or visit us at outdoornews.com. And don't forget to join us again here in 2 weeks to talk everything out of doors. Thanks for listening to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast.